Welcome to the Payments Journal podcast. Today, we're joined by Jamie Delmedico, Vice President of Aggregation and Information Services at Fiserv, along with Mercator Advisory Group's own Tim Sloan, Vice President of Payments Innovation. We're going to open our conversation with consumer views of data portability, minimization, and opt-in standards, followed by an exploration of why is data sharing top of mind right now? The effect of consumers using multiple non-traditional partners in their finances, consumer consent, and the returns for data sharing. And finally, how does open finance add value to the consumer experience? Without further ado, let's take it to the show.
So Jamie and Tim, it's an absolute pleasure to have you on this episode of the Payments Journal podcast. I want to talk around a very specific topic here, and that's really kind of around data and data collection and really kind of the importance of those two particular topics here, especially within the payments ecosystem. Now, we have this very interesting chart coming from your organization here, Jamie, that's taking a look at consumers' views of data portability and data minimization and opt-in standards here. So maybe you could kind of unpack a little bit of this data here and really what the story that it tells you. And for those of you who are following along, we're going to have this chart in the article below published on paymentsjournal.com. So Jamie, perhaps you could kind of start us off with that.
Yeah, sure. So, you know, we've been in the data aggregation space for a long time at Fiserv. And I think this chart really shows kind of the trends that we're seeing in the industry. What this chart really calls out to me is the fact that first and foremost, we're seeing the amount of data sharing to third-party applications really, really expand and grow. There's tons of new fintechs in the marketplace that are offering all types of unique experience and very niche product sets to consumers. And they need to do that because banks really can't provide it all to all types of client sets. And so what we're seeing then is fintechs are exploiting holes in the experience that banks or brokerages or credit card providers or debit card providers can't share. And as we're seeing that, the other piece that's interesting on this chart is that, you know, most consumers, even though they are sharing their credentials as part of the integration experience with those third-party fintechs, they actually don't really realize that, number one, that fintech may maintain access to their credentials for extended periods of time. And two, they may not realize that that fintech or aggregator is going to continuously access their data over an extended period of time, and they may be pulling things that perhaps they shouldn't be pulling. And so, you know, we at Fiserv are heavily focused on providing secure consumer-permissioned access to data via tokens to eliminate some of that guesswork for the consumer experience.
Yeah, the chart shows the kind of access that's taking place, and it's pretty broad and wide. You know, they're using tools to be able to improve their lifestyle or manage their wealth or other maybe daily pay and other solutions. And when they first get the ability to connect to their data, they accept it. And you're right, they have no clue that that's going to continue on and that they're going to have that constant access to that information. So having a mechanism to communicate to the customers, probably through the financial institution when it's their financial data being pulled, absolutely makes sense.
Tim, I fully agree. I mean, I think that, you know, times are changing as it relates to data access, and we're seeing more regulation in the marketplace, and we're seeing consumers be more concerned about sharing their credentials and their access. And again, I think it's really important for everyone in this space to be on their front foot as it relates to, you know, making sure that the consumer is permissioning their data appropriately and that they're abiding by the wishes of those consumers as it relates to use of their data and ongoing access to their data.
You know, I find it interesting that recently I've been starting to see more of the solutions I use do pop-ups that indicate that they're using a third-party aggregator to collect my data. And I think that those companies getting ready for those regulations.
Absolutely.
Yeah, let's kind of dive a little bit further kind of into that spectrum of it, right? Because, you know, certainly data sharing and the security aspect isn't something that's new. It's been around since the internet itself here and even before then. But like, I have to ask the question of kind of why now? Why is it that this subject in particular has really become top of mind for a lot of financial institutions, a lot of consumers, and essentially everybody within the payments ecosystem here? And Jamie, maybe you could kind of answer that, but then also maybe we could kind of dovetail a little bit into how the industry is making data sharing more secure.
Yeah, sure. So I think why now? I think we saw over the last 2 years during the COVID pandemic, we saw a massive shift to digital. We saw that across all different types of consumer experiences related to finance during the COVID pandemic. We saw Zelle transactions increase almost 100% and stay there. We saw remote deposit capture for mobile deposit of checks increase 50% and stay there. So those types of experiences are sticking, and we don't expect those to really begin to shy away. And, you know, the reason for that is because during the pandemic, banks were closed or people didn't feel comfortable going outside. So the only way that they had to engage with their financial institution or to open a new account, which let's face it, in 2 years, most people are opening some type of new account for a credit card or a DDA or what have you. And so that need doesn't go away, but people became much more comfortable conducting that business online. And again, that trend is really sticking. I mean, we expect that to certainly continue. The other piece, again, goes back to the kind of what we talked about just moments ago, which is that, you know, these third-party apps are growing. They're offering all types of unique experiences, and they're filling that gap that banks can't provide. I think the second piece of your question was really around, what is the industry doing about this? Well, I think the industry is doing really two things. One is we're starting to see most large financial institutions begin to make the pivot to open authorization or OAuth. And what that basically means is that those large financial institutions are no longer allowing a third-party aggregator or a third-party fintech to be able to collect credentials themselves to be able to continuously access that data. And those OAuth experiences are enabling the consumer to have more control about what data that fintech or that aggregator can collect, on what cadence, for which accounts, for which transactions, and so forth. And so that's really the first big thing that we're seeing as it relates to really secure access to data is really, again, in that large FIs moving to OAuth space. The second piece that we're beginning to see emerge, and this is, again, I'd say, you know, a bit slower than the larger FIs moving to OAuth, is actually smaller FIs being able to offer OAuth-like capabilities. So as an example, at Fiserv, we recently launched a product that we call All Data Connect that essentially enables an OAuth-like experience for any financial institution that maintains their core or their digital banking platform with Fiserv. And there are 3,400 of them here domestically. And so the way that this experience works is that basically a consumer engages with a third-party app, taken Acorns, for example. Historically, they would have entered their credentials into an aggregator. That aggregator would maintain those credentials and collect the data from their financial institution. Going forward, this OAuth experience actually moves that experience directly to the FI's digital experience for credential acceptance, oftentimes with biometric authentication as part of that experience, facial recognition or thumbprint. Those credentials are entered directly into that FI versus into a third party. And then the consumer has a series of choices they want to make around, again, which accounts, how frequently do we want that third party to access those accounts, and ultimately agrees to T's and C's, and we're off to the races. And that really creates for a much more secure ecosystem where we don't have consumer credentials floating all over the internet with all of these third party fintechs and different apps.
You know, that third party authentication was a major problem in Europe when PSD2 came out. They totally failed to think about how those third parties were going to authenticate the user for the financial institution, and it delayed the rollout significantly. It's great to hear that's what you're doing. That solves a huge problem in the authentication of the user, make sure the right people are getting access. On the growth side, I think I might add to your fine list, the other thing is the amount of money that's being pumped into fintechs through venture capital firms. That's what's growing those fintechs. It's driving innovation across a wide range of financial services that all need access to the data that's being held by the financial institutions that bank the customers.
Yep, Tim, you're spot on. And the good news is that the amount of capital that is being poured into these fintechs enables them to really adapt quickly to the changing environment and what we expect to see in terms of a changing regulatory environment around this secure, tokenized, consumer-permissioned access to data. So it's great that we're dealing with sort of a, you know, a group of companies that are well-capitalized, that are able to make this pivot and still create really unique and important experiences for their consumers.
Yeah, that's excellent.
Yeah. So, I mean, Jamie, you know, a lot of the things that you were talking about there, one from just the change in the consumer behavior aspect that you kind of touched upon at the beginning there, completely agree that we've kind of let the genie out of the bottle there. And there's essentially kind of no going back from these new consumer experiences that individuals have certainly come to love and expect from their financial institutions, quite frankly, at this point. But I do want to take a look at just the access of this data here, right? Because, I mean, as Tim was kind of pointing out, and Jamie, you were pointing out with these third party players, is that you've got multiple non-traditional players that are being entered into the space that allow individuals to be able to kind of manage their finances here that's not directly coming from the financial institution. So I've got to ask the question, like, does the ability to be able to integrate with these third-party solutions, does that really matter to the financial institution? And then also, I think you kind of touched upon it a little bit here, but maybe we can dive a little bit deeper into what then is the side effect of data security to kind of allowing for that access.
So first and foremost, financial institutions absolutely want their consumers to be able to access these third-party apps. They recognize that they cannot offer all of the same services that third parties offer, and their consumers ultimately are looking for those services. The second piece is there is legislation in the marketplace, Dodd-Frank 1033 in particular, that does stipulate that financial institutions need to provide to third-party sources consumer permission to access to their own data. And so financial institutions, you know, whether they provide access to that consumer permission data via an API or via an OAuth type arrangement or via the traditional method of getting access to the data, which is screen scraping. Financial institutions need to be able to provide that to their consumers. And we've had financial institutions that we deal with at Fiserv that, for whatever reason, different aggregators were not providing access for their consumer access to data. And those financial institutions were hearing about it from their customers. They were saying, hey, why can't we, you know, I want to open an Acorns account and I can't do that because I can't connect my bank account to Acorns. Why not? So financial institutions absolutely want to enable that experience. They are required to enable that experience for their consumers. But the second part of your question, I think, is really important, which is as more and more fintechs enter the space, as more and more aggregators are out there, the sheer volume of credential sharing certainly opens the door for fraud. And as I mentioned before, you know, a lot of smaller financial institutions find it difficult to offer an OAuth-like experience. And so this just gets back to, you know, we at Fiserv take that very seriously, and we want to make sure that every consumer permission data access request goes into an OAuth-like API experience where, again, we're not sharing credentials, but rather we're sharing key pieces of financial data via token that is consumer permissioned in the long term.
Yeah, the other side of it is the financial institution has to really help their account holders by providing the data to those third parties that are servicing the account holder, but they also have to start thinking pretty seriously about what services they want to offer. My credit union just got into the wealth management side. I don't think they're doing a very good job there, pounding me over the head to get me to put in all of my accounts so they can aggregate the data. But there's other credit unions that have done home maintenance kinds of solutions where they have third-party data at a regional level to be able to recommend maintenance plans for the home, which goes not just to those that they've provided mortgages to, but anybody can use it. And I think they see that as a customer acquisition, mortgage acquisition kind of play. And I think more and more financial institutions have to think about what they would like to offer and who they would like to offer it with.
100%, Tim. And I think one of the key pieces of offering an experience that is similar to OAuth is providing analytics and data back to that financial institution to say, hey, these are the types of services your consumers are engaging with. Here's how much money we've seen leave your financial institution to go to those third-party apps. And that is a really critical enabler from a roadmap prioritization perspective for a lot of these financial institutions that look out in the marketplace and see thousands of different solutions that they could integrate into their online or mobile banking applications to help them prioritize what should they really be focused on and what would provide the biggest bang for their buck for the consumers of those FIs.
Jamie, that's great. A couple of years ago, when the financial institutions were trying to figure out how many of their customers were using prepaid cards, it was amazing how many couldn't take a look at their ACH and card base to understand and filter who are the major prepaid card suppliers that their customers were using. It was just too hard for them to do, and so they just ignored it. Being able to provide those kinds of analytics will really help.
Totally agree.
Yeah, I certainly agree. And we've certainly seen that evolution, or kind of the mindset shift for a lot of financial institutions starting to really realize and hone in on the power of the data that they have access to and what that can ultimately mean for them from a roadmap strategy and in the products and services that they offer their consumers. But Jamie, I am kind of curious, because we talked a lot about, you know, kind of some of the reasons why a consumer would consent to being able to say, hey, yes, I want this other third party to be able to have access to my financial data, which is certainly very sensitive and kind of very personal data and certainly needs to be secure. But maybe you could kind of highlight to our audience here, like, when people kind of acknowledge that, hey, yes, they want to do this data sharing here, what is it ultimately they're looking for in return? And what are the top reasons that people are giving for consenting of, you know, sharing that data?
Yeah, so I think the bottom line here is that, you know, consumers are willing to consent to data sharing in exchange for what they consider valuable and anything that would simplify their life. And I think one great example of this in kind of today's world is, you know, we in the United States have a growing community of gig economy workers. There are thousands and thousands and thousands, if not millions, of gig economy workers emerging in the United States. And oftentimes they have to juggle sort of multiple gigs across, you know, Uber Eats, Uber, different, you know, applications that are focused on home improvement, right? They're doing all these things in the gig economy space. And as a result of that, they have very unique needs that, you know, a traditional FI cannot provide to them. Now, while they may need to have a checking or a savings account or a CD or a loan with a financial institution, those consumers are very willing to share their information and their data with a third-party gig economy app that can help them with cash flow analysis and predictive alerts around cash flow shortfalls, that can help them with managing their tax situation at any given period of time and making sure that they're planning appropriately for tax. Frankly, helping them find other gigs, other work that they could do in the short term to manage any cash flow situations, providing new lending experiences like early access to funds based on, you know, real shifts and hours worked. All those things are extraordinarily valuable to a gig economy worker today, and they're more than willing to offer up their data to those applications in exchange for that value.
Yeah, the daily pay is a powerful solution for hourly workers. And what's interesting is it shows the other side of aggregation. There are payroll aggregators that collect the data from payroll companies and private companies in order to be able to see the hours worked and be able to predict that, yes, it's good to go ahead and do a daily pay for this particular individual. So we have financial institutions providing data, but sometimes a solution needs data from other sources, such as payroll solutions, in order to drive the right benefits to the end user. And that's where things get really interesting.
Tim, fully agree. And I can't help but mention, you know, you mentioned other aggregators in the space. To your point about income and employment verification providers, there are many of them. There are also many other financial data aggregators. We at Fiserv kind of recognize the importance of working alongside those other data aggregators to create a really, again, secure open finance system where the more secure access we're providing across multiple aggregators, the better. And recently we've actually announced two partnerships, one with MX, who's a leader in the open finance space, and one with Finicity, another leader in the open finance space, where they have actually agreed for clients that are on our All Data Connect platform, which again is the OAuth-like experience for Fiserv hosted financial institutions. Both of those aggregators, which account for a major share of the domestic aggregation volume, have agreed to actually connect to Fiserv financial institutions through All Data Connect. And that's a huge win, not only for our financial institutions who view that as an opportunity to reduce fraud, to create a better consumer experience for their consumers, and to keep some of that volume off of their IPs hitting their online and mobile banking platforms, but also for their consumers, because again, they're, you know, they're providing their access, their data in a secure, consumer permissioned way. They have the ability to control which accounts and data those other aggregators see. And that's a major benefit that these financial institutions, again, that typically wouldn't have had the ability to offer that service, are now able to do through a Fiserv solution. So we're really proud of that and happy with our partnership with MX and Finicity.
Yeah, that's great news. It brings the aggregation capability down to the long tail that you already mentioned, 3,400 banks in the United States. That's a huge win.
Agreed.
Yeah, and I certainly couldn't help but at the beginning of the conversation there, where you're talking about a lot of just the integration points that a lot of consumers look for and really kind of pointing towards gig economy workers and kind of SMBs here. And really kind of what went in through my mind here was Jay-Z's famous quote of, "I'm not a businessman, I'm a businessman." And that's really kind of where my mind went with that. But I do want to touch upon, Jamie, what you'd kind of said there a little bit in terms of the open finance side of things. So how does open finance add value to the consumer experience? And what are the other ways it benefits the consumer?
Oh, sure. I mean, gosh, I think open finance makes a lot of things easier for the consumer, and that is why they're willing to consent to their data being shared. I mean, it makes money movement easier, right? Seamless connection of accounts. I just opened a Greenlight debit card for my 11-year-old daughter last week. It was the slickest experience I think I've ever seen. Really, really impressive. It streamlines the borrowing experience. No longer do you have to scan or upload or fax documentation into a financial institution for a borrowing experience. They can pull it directly from your FI via open finance. Investing in brokerage is easier. You can fund an account. You can quickly get money into your brokerage account if you have a new stock that you want to buy, and you can do it in real time. You can create 360-degree views of your finances. You can see all your financial assets in one place and understand your current financial standing at any given point in time. I mentioned tax management, right? You can use open finance as a way to really make doing your taxes much easier, as I know, because I did it 2 days ago for 2021 taxes. So there's a million ways that open finance provides value. And in my mind, it really is all about making life easier on the consumer, giving them more options, and providing value in ways that previously they didn't have access to. And then certainly, I can't talk about this without, again, kind of putting a plug in for how open finance actually does provide a more secure environment, right? Again, less credentials splashed around the internet, less paper, less mail, tokenized data. All of those items really make open finance much more secure than traditional ways of managing money.
You know, I also finished my taxes just a couple of days ago, and as I was going through it, it offered to collect information from the different financial institutions that I'm connected to and payroll suppliers in order to automate the function of loading the data in. And it was so disappointing. Not one of them worked. I ended up having to key all the data in anyways. That'll get better as we get more of the data connected into the Fiserv hub.
Fully agree. And I think one of the key items there is, you know, again, when we're talking about scanning and faxing and all those items, then using some kind of optical character recognition to pull data off, it's just not as it is a very convoluted process. Direct access, tokenized data enables these fintechs, including tax preparers, to really, you know, pre-fill a bunch of a tax form that previously, to your point, Tim, is very manual in nature.
It was hilarious. They also offered for me to upload the image and that they would then OCR it and get the data. About 15 minutes later, having uploaded two different forms two or three times, total failure. I'm entering the data by hand.
Excellent. Well, you know what? I think we'll end things on that note there. So that being said, Jamie, Tim, thank you so much for taking the time today for speaking to me about data sharing and data aggregation. And I hope to have you both back on the podcast real soon.
Thanks, Brian, thanks for having us.
Thanks, Jamie.
Thanks, Tim.